Matthew 5 begins the Sermon on the Mount. And in Matthew 5, some of the most iconic and memorable statements Jesus would ever make are listed. Matthew 5, 14 through 15 is not the least of those. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. One of my goals on Sunday evenings here is to spend quite a bit of time in the words of Jesus and looking at what he himself has said. That was one of the things on the list is just what does Jesus say and more about him. And so there's no better way to find out about him than to just simply go and see what he says and to spend some time dwelling on it. And so tonight, we're going to look at Matthew 5, 14 through 15. And I'll connect it to some other parts of the Bible, but ultimately we want to kind of focus in on what did Jesus mean when he spoke these on the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus was preparing his disciples to understand their role within the world. And that's an important thing for us to understand, is that we are to be in the world, but not of the world, that we have a place here, a function here, but we're not going to be just like everybody else. The Bible is very clear that Christians are to be different than the world that is around them, but that we're also not to remove ourselves from that world because that world needs us. And so the first thing I want you to see is that he simply says, you are the light of the world. When he tells his disciples, he doesn't say you should be. He doesn't say you could be. He doesn't say I would hope that. He says you are. We've got to understand there's no plan B. There is no plan B that if we're not the light of the world, then God will bring that light some other way. We're it. We are his plan. The church is his plan. It is through the church that he will reveal his wisdom to the principalities and powers in the heavenly places. It is through his people that he will change the world and affect it, like that little mustard seed that would grow and grow and grow and grow and grow. It was through his people. That's the plan. You say, well, what if his people aren't who they ought to be? What if we don't do our job? What if we're not as bright a lights as we ought to be? So what does he do then? And the answer is nothing. And I don't know about you, but for me, I find that both shocking and terrifying, you know, all at once. What's plan B for Monroe if we don't do our job? There's no plan B. There's no other people. There's no other system. It's like, well, if the Christians won't be the light, then I'll send angels and they'll bring... No, that's not how it works. We find that we are told we are to be the light. You are the light of the world. Now, think of a light with a dimmer switch. And I'm pretty sure Jesus didn't have this in mind in Matthew 5 as a dimmer switch. But you think about a light and you have that dimmer switch and it's the only light. And whether that light is low or that light is up high and bright, it's still the only light. That's the only switch you got. And so, too, that's what we find with us. And throughout the Bible, that has always been the way. God looks down at a society and says, well, is there light there or not? Are my people doing their job or not? When God looked down at Sodom and Gomorrah, what was the question in his mind about whether to keep the cities there or not? How many people of mine are there? That was the only question he asked. Those are the light. When you look in the Old Testament in Ezekiel 22, verse 30, I think about this verse a lot. That there, in Ezekiel 22, 30, Ezekiel, God says, I sought for a man among them who would make a wall and stand in the gap before me on behalf of the land that I should not destroy it. But I found no one. In the case of Israel, God looked and he was going to take them off into captivity unless, he said, unless there was somebody who's standing in the gap. He said, if I could find one, I saw it, I was wanting so desperately, if there's just one person who'd stand in the gap, I would have said, okay, there's still a reason. But I searched and I searched and I found no one. There are gaps in this world, and we feel it, don't we? We feel it's a world that's kind of feels like it's falling apart at the seams. And that's not because of today. It's always felt that way. Because when you have the world and it's trying, it's a bunch of people trying to live their life without God, they're always on the brink of self-destruction. That's what it looks like to live a life without God in it. Is you're just always kind of teetering, trying to hold the pieces together. And it doesn't work. We're supposed to stand in that gap. We're supposed to be the people in our own lives, with the people that we're around, who we stand in the gap and stand by God. And just like in Ezekiel, he says, if they stand in the gap before me on behalf of the land, if you and I will stand in the gap on behalf of Monroe, on behalf of the community around here, on behalf of our friends and our neighbors and our loved ones who are not yet obedient to the faith, but if we would stand in the gap and be the voice, be the light, that's what he's looking for. There is no plan B. Luke chapter 11, verse 34 through 36, which, by the way, if you look over in Luke 11, that's a corresponding account to Matthew 5. And so that this comes right after Jesus saying, you're the light of the world in Luke 11. He says, the eye is the lamp of your body. When your eye is clear, your whole body also is full of light. But when it is bad, your body also is full of darkness. Then watch out that the light in you is not darkness. If therefore your whole body is full of light with no dark part in it, it will be wholly illumined as when the lamp illumines you with its rays. The light that the Bible talks about over and over again is the light of God's truth, the light of His good news, the light of the fact that there is a God and He's a rewarder of those who seek Him. That truth that there is a God and He did send His Son and He did die for our sins and that He is the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through Him. That's the light. And before I can have that light and be that light to everybody else, that light has to come into me. Jesus says, your eye is the lamp of the body. The scriptures are just riddled with examples and reminders not to get too distracted by the things down here. Don't get distracted by the little bits of tinfoil in your life. There's a book. My kids ask me a couple times a year, Dad, what's your favorite book? And I go, the Bible? But that's probably not what you're asking. And they go, no, that's not what we're asking. We know the Bible. Okay. I say, it's Where the Red Fern Grows. That's my favorite book. And in that book, there's this example he gives of a raccoon that if you bore a hole out in a log, and by the way, it's true, and you put a little piece of tin foil in the log, and then you put nails so that they come through the sides of the hole, the raccoon will reach his little paw, and raccoons are real smart little things, and he'll grab the tin foil because it's really shiny, and he loves shiny things. And then he won't let go of it. And what happens when you move from a hand like this to grab? Now he can't get it out because of the nails. And the raccoon will die in there. He's trapped himself. All he's got to do is let go of the tinfoil, but he won't do it. Because he likes the shiny. If we're not careful, that's what can happen to us. Your eye is the lamp of your body. Where's your focus? If we're to be the light of the world so that the light shine of Christ shines and radiates out from us, it has to shine into us first. We have to have our priorities set. We have to remember that there are things that are important, there are things that are good, but not as important. There are things that are trivial, they're not important, they're neither here nor there, and then there's things that are just flat out wicked. Now most of us are pretty good saying, okay, well I'll stay out of the wicked stuff. But what about the stuff that isn't bad in and of itself, but it's just the cares and the concerns of the world, just the tinfoil. And it becomes everything that we do and everything that we focus on. And then we look back years in our life and we go, I spent my whole life with my hand in the log with the tinfoil. You are the light of the world. We're it, folks. Jesus didn't leave any room for anybody else. We either do our job here, or his next option is, when he can't find anybody faithful in a community, what does he say? What has he said to nation after nation after nation? When a nation doesn't have salt and it doesn't have light, they're done. You want to know the future of America? That's it. It's just that simple. There will come a point somewhere along the line, and may it not be in our lifetimes because we should do our job. But there will come a point sometime in its history where God will look down and it'll say, I don't see any light there. Probably should give this territory to somebody else and let them start over. The next is, you are the light of the world and a city. So there's two things that are put side by side. You're the light and the city. And when you think about that, it's really a beautiful example. Because a city back then is not like a city today. Monroe still feels like its own independent city. And we're still kind of on our own. You drive into town, it's like, okay, now I'm in the city. And we got a big bridge and a river that's separates us from other cities. But most of the time when you drive into a city now, it's like, well, where does Redmond end and Bellevue begin? All right, they just kind of all mesh together. But that wasn't the way it was in the first century. When Jesus said, you're a city set on a hill, if you were a Jew and you thought of a city set on a hill, there was one city that jumped straight to your mind. It's Jerusalem. Every account in the Bible talks about people going to Jerusalem, and it says they went up. They went up to Jerusalem. It's a big hill, and right on the top of it is a city. And if you were traveling at night, what would you travel towards? You're going to go up the hill towards the light. Because that's what a city have. The lights would be on. The torches would be lit. In Zechariah 8, verse 3, there's a prophecy about Christ and his church. And he compares it to Jerusalem that's on the top of Mount Zion. He says, thus says the Lord, I will return to Zion and will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and then Jerusalem. That is, he's talking about us. Now, the Jews didn't understand that, but Zechariah is talking about us. Then Jerusalem, the new Jerusalem, the church, will be called the city of truth. And the mountain of the Lord of hosts will be called the holy mountain. Just like if you were a traveler and you'd come a great long distance, and it's late at night, and the sun's gone down, and you're weary and worn out, and you want to know, where can I rest for the night? What do you look for? City set on a hill with the light shining. That's what we're to be to everybody else. When people have problems and heartache, and they think, I just need somebody I could call and talk to about it, we should be those people. We should be those people, one, because you do have, you have truth. You have answers for them. You know, if somebody's sick, you want them to go to a doctor who's got answers, don't you? And what did Jesus say? He says, I am the great physician. He's the doctor. And we're all his understudies. All of us have been given the same education and truth. He came and taught us so that we could bring those answers to people who are sick, soul sick. It's worse than a physical ailment. It's a soul sickness. Scriptures describe those who are sick in the soul as dead even while they're living. He says the church should be that city of truth sitting on the mountain called the Holy Mountain. These people are different. And they may not want to talk to you when their life is all going great. Then they're not interested. Everything's fine. But when their marriage starts falling apart, who do they think of? Or when they're just broken down by things and they just think, I know it feels stupid, but I couldn't talk to anybody else, but who I could talk to is. I knew you wouldn't be mean. I knew you'd love me, and I thought maybe you might be able to help. We should be those people. That when people are in the weariest stage of their journey and it's nothing but darkness around, they can look up and they go, but I could talk to so-and-so. I could go to them. Isaiah 2 verse 2 says that is exactly what the church is. It will come about that in the last days the mountain of the house of the Lord will be established as the chief of the mountains. Of all the great cities that have ever been, the mountain and the city of truth that is the church will be chief amongst them. And it'll be raised above the hills and all the nations will stream to it. All the nations will come running for answers, running for hope, running for a Savior. Folks, we are that city set on a hill. We are that great mountain that the nations would stream to. Not because we're great, but because He is. And you've already been let in the kingdom. You're already a part of it. You've already got all of the blessings. And Jesus tells us that of all the things that we should be grateful and selfless, should we not? Since you and I have a hope in heaven, we should live and show preference to other people. There's no greater example of selflessness than when you know you have something good and you make sure to share it. And there's no greater example of selfishness, by the way, than to have something as great and wonderful as salvation and for us to keep our mouths shut about it. What kind of man has a free gift that cost him nothing to share and yet won't say anything to anybody else? All it costs us is the time and the effort to be honest about it. Especially when we're told that if we will be ready to make a defense and give a defense for the hope that is within us, that we'll be rewarded for that. So not only is there a blessing for the hearer if they'll take it, but even if they don't take it, there's a blessing for the giver. There's no downside, is there? We're the light of the world, a city set on a hill. If you've ever been on a long road trip late at night and you're trying to get the family into the hotel and you've been driving and driving and everybody's exhausted, when you see the exit, isn't that a good feeling? We're here. Kids, we're here. That's what the church is. We're the city set on a hill. And then it says the city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Once again, there's no equivocation with Jesus. It's not it shouldn't be hidden or it probably shouldn't be hidden. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. And that makes sense, right? If you put a city on a hill, how are you going to hide that? Can't. I don't know how to do that. How would you hide it from anything? Well, that's what we're to be. We're to be living lives that simply cannot be hidden. Acts chapter 4, verse 19 through 20. Peter and John, when brought before the Sanhedrin, said, "Whether it's right in the sight of God to give heed to you rather than to God, you be the judge. For we cannot stop speaking about what we have seen and heard." That's the kind of man I want to be someday. I want to be the guy who says, "I can't stop talking about it." And I'll tell you, I'm not there yet. Because there's times where the world makes you feel awkward or embarrassed for being a Christian. And you want to be hidden and you want to find a corner to maybe pretend. But why? When you think about what we have and what we've been given and what we're offering, why should we hide that? There's no reason to. And Peter and John, they said, "Look, whether you think it's right in the sight of God to give heed to you rather than God, you be the judge." We cannot stop. It's just part of our DNA of who we are. In Daniel chapter 6, verse 10, Daniel shows us how to get to be those kind of people who we can't stop speaking. And when Daniel, when the document was signed, the law that said it was wrong to pray to any god, it says, when Daniel knew that the document was signed, he entered his house. Now in his roof chamber, he had windows open toward Jerusalem, and he continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying and giving thanks before his God, as he had been doing previously. How did Daniel get to be the kind of guy who he knew, if I pray, they're going to throw me in that lion den? And he would have known. He was one of the rulers. He would have known what that lion's den looked like. He would have known how hungry they were. He probably would have seen people who'd faced that kind of punishment and execution himself. So there's no misconception. So to you and I, we go, man, what would that be like? Daniel probably knew. So how do you get to be the kind of person who does what Daniel did, who he knows if I pray, they're going to throw me in there and my bones will be crunched and I'm going to be ripped asunder? How do you get to be the kind of guy who kneels down and prays anyways? Look at the end of the verse. As he had done previously. You know how you get to the point where you're not ashamed? You know how you get to the point where people can't stop you from talking about Jesus and living Jesus and being the kind of people whose light is shining and not hidden? You just do it every day. You make it your habit. You make it your habit to live that way. You make it your habit to talk that way because that's who you are. That you talk about being blessed, or when good things happen to you, you give credit and you say, it's just the hand of God in my life. I've been praying that things will work out, and then this and this and this happens. I just see the Lord working in my life. Not for attention, not so it's like, ooh, look at me, I'm a great Christian person. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that's the way you talk because you actually just sincerely feel that way. And when we do that, you can't hide. See, it's funny the way Jesus talks, because on one hand, he tells us, don't do your works before men to be seen by men. So if you go out and you pray, so everybody go, wow, look at that guy praying. That's a no-no. He'll say that in the exact same sermon, just a couple chapters over of Matthew. And yet, on the other hand, we are supposed to represent Christ. So how do you do it? You become a city who can't hide itself. I'm not doing it for the attention. That's just who I am. I pray before I eat. I'm not doing it so you'll see. I say, God's been very good to me. Not because I want you to know, wow, look at that pious Scott Byer. But no, I just really, that's how I think. God's been really good to me. When we begin to change our language to match the faith that we have, and we just live that way daily, then we can't hide it. It becomes a part of our DNA, just built right into us, because it becomes our habit of lifestyle. And then it says, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on the lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. One of the beautiful things about God's system for living and God's system for us being his children is that it is without respect of persons. He doesn't ask you to find this right person over here and make sure they know. Find this person over here and make sure that you have that conversation with them. Who's the light for? Gives light to all. The light is indiscriminate, isn't it? You light a candle and you put it in the middle of the room and it goes every direction as far as it can go. And as bright as it's able to shine, it just goes. It's not thinking, well, if I shine that direction, so-and-so will know. Doesn't have to think that. It just shines. In Acts chapter 5, verse 13, it says, speaking of the early church in Jerusalem, it says, none of the rest dared to associate with them. That is, they saw people, most people, they saw the church, they said, well, I'm not going to be one of them. However, the people held them in high esteem. That's a compliment that God gives his people. You know what the early church was like in Jerusalem? Lots and lots of people had no interest whatsoever in becoming Christians. Ooh, I'm not going to be one of those. But they're pretty good people. Wish there were more people like that in the world. Isn't that funny? There's an irony and a contradiction there, isn't it? When people look and they say, we need more people like that, but I don't want to be like that. But that does happen. It exists in the world all the time. Because the light shines everywhere. The Church of Jerusalem, there were many people who heard about Christians, and they saw Christians, and they lived around Christians, and they were benefited from their interactions with Christians, and yet they said, I don't want to be a Christian. And you know what? That was okay. It isn't our job to hunt down and find the one. It's our job just to shine. In John chapter 1, verse 4 and 5, we get the example of Jesus, who was the epitome of that. In him was life. And the life was the light of men. And the light shines in the darkness. And the darkness did not comprehend it. when we live our lives for Christ, we can't expect our lives to turn out any different or the reaction of people to us any different than it did to him. It's the best you can hope for is for the students to become like the master. That's the best case scenario. Well, what happened to the master? The light would shine in a dark place, and what did the darkness do? The vast majority of it said, oh, that's weird. The darkness didn't comprehend it. But he kept shining. He did his part. And oh, what a great part it was. It isn't your job to worry about who's going to obey the gospel. It's your job to be a city set on a hill in the light of the world. That's it. That's all we got to do. We do that bit. And it's just like the sower, right? You just cast the seed out and let the soil take care of itself. But there is no plan B. We are the light of the world. There's no other option. When Jesus spoke, one of the things that amazes me more than anything else is that Jesus, though he knew people, he knew the darkest, worst parts of men like Peter. He could look Peter right in the eye and he goes, Peter, you think you won't deny me? I know you will. And yet, the Jesus who knew people and all of their failings still turned to those people and said, I believe you can do this. This is God's plan. You're the light of the world. I'm going to make the sacrifice and then I expect you to go out and share it. And that's exactly how the church grew. What a wonderful God we have who would honor us with such opportunity. The invitation song is number 353. If you have not obeyed the gospel,